welcome friends to America's 250, One Place, Many Voices. I'm Nanette Weiser, and I am the series host. We are celebrating America 250, and this podcast, which airs weekly on Radio St. Pete at 1:10 p.m. and is available anytime, anywhere on RadioSt.Pete.com on the podcast channel, is powered by Heritage Village with the generous support from Florida Humanities. Today's host, who is a regular host and part of this incredible project, is Beth Gelman. You know her well from her podcast on Radio St. Pete. And with her today is a wonderful guest. Beth, please, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Nanette. I'm excited to be here today. With me is Marcia Jo Zerovitz. In 1985, Marcia Jo began traveling across Florida to perform grassroots research to retrieve the state's hidden 250-plus-year Jewish history. She put together the first comprehensive narrative of Jewish life in Florida, creating a touring exhibition and archive that would result in the creation of the Jewish Museum of Florida, where she served as founding executive director. Now retired and living on St. Pete Beach, this cultural anthropologist and author continues to curate exhibits, lectures, research, and write on Florida Jewish history and anti-Semitism. Marcia, thank you so much for being here and sharing your expertise.
My pleasure. It's going to be fun.
I think so. Now, before we get into the Pinellas County Jewish history, I'd like to better understand the larger story of how you found it. You traveled 250,000 miles across Florida collecting stories that were essentially disappearing. Who were you talking to and why? And what was it you were afraid of losing?
Well, that's a great question, Beth. Thank you. I was afraid, and actually I've had a passion for Jewish life and Jewish continuity since my early years. And over the time that I've been involved in so many national, local, and statewide Jewish organizations, I was afraid of Jews losing their pride, their identity, and their continuity. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing to me, is the continuity. There'll be Jews after our generation. As a result of a lack of education and the rise in anti-Semitism based on conspiracy theories, myths, and lies, basically the loss due to ignorance, mm-hmm. what was not commonly known. So I felt that is much more important for young people, especially, to learn about what Jews have contributed to the quality of life for all people, even those who hate us, rather than know just the Jews who have died. So, which is what you did, I know, but I just feel like, I don't know if you know the author Daryl Horn, but I believe in her philosophy and her theories that people love dead Jews. And she has a book called that. Mm-hmm. And I want our young people to know the good thing about being Jewish, the pride, so they will have more pride and more identity and be more Jewish. So we have to know what Jews have contributed.
I love that.
So as my background was a Jewish organizational leader, and in the 1970s, I was on the first United Jewish Appeal Young Women's Leadership Cabinet, and we had a retreat. And they asked us a question, why are you involved? A very simple question. And the other women that were there were from the larger Jewish communities that had been around for very much longer than Florida, that were known. Chicago, Cleveland, Philadelphia, New York, Savannah, Georgia, those kind of places. And they all said they were involved because their mothers, their aunts, or their grandmothers before them were involved. Mm. And that hit me like, well, Florida doesn't have that depth of generations. We have a problem here. And then I was a president of the Jewish Federation in Greater Orlando in the 70s. And I had different well-known Jewish leaders to come for retreats. And I invited Rabbi Yitz Greenberg one weekend for Shabbat weekend. And he was the founder of the Center for Learning and Leadership in New York called Kalal. And he said, which this is the thing that really got me, he said, if your memories are Jewish, you will be Jewish. Huh. And I realized that we did not have a Jewish memory in Florida. Mm-hmm. It was shocking to me that Florida hosts the nation's third largest Jewish community, And no one thought it was important enough to do the history here. They all thought it was condo commandos post-World War II Miami Beach, and who cared?
Mm-hmm.
So no one had done the research. Mm-hmm. I'm not a historian. I'm not a scholar by my experience or profession, but I became one because of this. And then I developed my own theory from that Jews are like flowers. We wither and die without our roots. Mm-hmm. Our collective memories are our roots. And that's what has driven me, talking about our history, because history is people. And I love people. I love to meet new people. I love to hear their stories. And stories are what Jews do. The stories are great. Jews are great storytellers. And we had not asked the questions in Florida to get the stories. So I love the stories, and everyone has one. So to ensure our Jewish continuity and our identity as our people, this is what I went to find out. Our roots. So you asked me, who did I talk to? As you mentioned, I traveled 250,000 miles around Florida. Well, how did I do that, and why did I do that? I went into about 30 different communities from Pensacola down to Key West, and I set up volunteer task forces. I was a volunteer. These were all volunteers. And it was a real grassroots project. That's what I loved about it, because mm-hmm. they didn't know. In my experience, may back up as a leader in so many Jewish organizations in Florida. Every time I would go to a community, I would say, "Who were the first Jews here? What did they do to contribute to the community? How did they get along with the non-Jewish community?" And nobody had any answers. Mm. That's when I realized no one had ever done the history here. So I made an outline. I am an organized person, so I made an outline of what we needed, the story we wanted to tell, and then what we needed to tell that story, the oral histories, the photographs, the documents, the artifacts. And I made an outline of what we needed and what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I set up these task forces, and so I would go from community to community to meet with them, to move them along. And I did that over 8 years.
Wow.
And what came out of that were all these stories and all these artifacts. In fact, I have like an example of a printout. I kept it. It was before computers.
Uh-huh.
So everything was on a legal pad. And then in 1984, this little Macintosh, Apple came out with this little Macintosh 9-inch computer. It wasn't a laptop. It was a little cube. And a 10-year-old kid taught me how to work it. And I carried it from community. It had a little slot in the top of the screen, in the case, and I carried it from community to community, and I started creating a database. This 10-year-old kid taught me how to do that. This 10-year-old kid is now 57. So I made a database of by community, by date of what the item was, what it was, and then I was able to sort and get the history, see this history that way. This is the one for Pinellas County. So in each community, I found men and women who were pioneer descendants. In this community, it was Marilyn Benjamin, mm-hmm. who was a Howitzer, and Bunny Katz, who was a Hyman, and Goldie Schuster. So I was able to, through those three women, they developed a volunteer task force in Pinellas County, and they helped me gather this went on in 30 communities. So that's how I did. The categories that we were looking for were immigration, where people came from, how did they get here, why did they come here, how did they make a living, the families, the synagogues, the institutions that were built, community relations, the interethnic and the interreligious and ethnic interaction, anti-Semitism, political involvement, civic involvement, social services, a response to the wars, Israel development, the Holocaust, civil rights, suffrage, unions, all those things, community relations, and then contributions that they made, and this was really important in politics. The person that brought Florida into statehood was a Jew in 1845. Who knew?
Mm-hmm.
The first developer in Florida was a Jew. Who knew? Moses Elias Levy. So in politics, business, agriculture, industry, science, cultural activities, development, architecture, and building, in all these areas, we looked to the Jews that made contributions, and it told a massive story.
That is amazing, and so really, there's so many specific ways to look at all these communities. It's really extraordinary. We're going to turn now to Pinellas County. So can you tell me how the settlement of Jews arriving in Pinellas County fits into the state timeline? And from your research, who were the first Jews to arrive in Pinellas County?
Well, let me back up. When you talk about the state timeline, let me put everything in a frame of reference, okay? Because people are going to be shocked about this. There are really two important dates to know about Florida Jewish history. The one is Ponce de Leon discovered Florida for Spain in 1513. Because Florida was then owned by Spain, and it was during the Inquisition, only Catholics could live in Florida for 250 years. People did not realize that. I ask, you know, non-Jews all the time, are you a Catholic? And they say, you know, I'm Protestant or Episcopalian. I said, well, you couldn't have lived here either. Only Catholics could have lived here. And then what happened is in 1763, after the French-Indian War, when the European governments were all fighting for supremacy, after the French-Indian War in 1763, there was a treaty signed in Paris, France. It was called the Treaty of Paris. And in that treaty, Britain got possession of Florida from Spain. And Britain just wanted people to settle here. They didn't care who they were. They even allowed Jews. So people came in 1565 when St. Augustine was the first city. Mm-hmm. I found out there were actually soldiers and settlers that were Jewish. It was conversos living in St. Augustine in 1565. 1565. So it's more than 250 years old. The history really goes back almost 500 years, 461 years to be exact, when Jews as conversos first settled in Florida. Mm. And how I found that was working with the St. Augustine Foundation. Eugene Lyon was head of it. He called me one day and he said, Marcia, I hear what you're doing. This was in the 80s. I hear what you're doing. You need to come up here. I need to show you my list of settlers and soldiers who lived in St. Augustine in 1565. And there were a lot of Sephardic names. So that's how we were able to find that out. So the first time the Jews settled in Florida after that was 1763, when they could identify as a Jew. Mm-hmm. In 1565, they have to hide their Jews, right, their Judaism, because they're conversos. So Jews first settled in Pensacola in 1763. And then we had Micanopy in 1819. We had Tallahassee in 1837, Key West in 1840, Jacksonville in 1841, Tampa 1844, Ocala 1850s. Now you notice this is all in the north. There was mm-hmm. no South Florida at right. that time. So we finally have Pinellas County now as the eighth place in Florida where Jews settled. The first place was Tarpon Springs in 1883. We had Jews settle there. And then after that, we had Orlando, 1865, Palm Beach County and Miami, 1892, as a result of Flagler's Railroad coming down the East Coast. Then we had St. Petersburg in 1901. And I'm going to talk about the first Jew who settled in St. Petersburg. And that was not till 1901. Then we have Broward, Sarasota, Miami Beach, Boca, and then Southwest Naples and Fort Myers were the last places in the 1950s. So that's the overall scope of settlement in Florida. So in the late 19th, early 20th century, Jews began to arrive in Pinellas County. There was a Russian Jew by the name of Edward Blum, B-L-U-M, who arrived in Tarpon Springs in 1883. Mm. He opened a grocery store on Tarpon Avenue and applied to open a post office. There were only 45 people living in Tarpon, but he opened a post office, and he was the postmaster in Tarpon Springs. A Jew was the postmaster in Tarpon Springs in 1885, and then he was a city commissioner.
Wow.
So he was the first Jewish politician in Pinellas County. Then we have, you want me to continue with Pinellas?
Oh, please, yes.
Okay, then we have what's called a chain reaction. Because once a Jew comes from Russia or a shtetl in Russia or in Poland, other people come, they hear, oh, Jews can comfortably live there, so we're going to go where he is mm-hmm. or she is. So Jews started settling more rapidly once one person got here. And there was a German immigrant by the name of Henry Schutz, S-C-H-U-T-Z, who was the first Jew to settle in 1901. And I should back up and say the first Jew that we know of.
Right, certainly.
Because, you know, there is, now we have ads from his store. And this was a really remarkable thing. This is what I love. Everything was very much serendipity as I moved around the state. I went to the Orange County Historical Museum very early in my research, and there was a mural on the wall in the lobby of the historical museum, and it was a man wrestling an alligator in the street. and Orlando was very primitive. This was in 1885, and there were little storefronts, and there was, of course, no sidewalks. They were just like wooden boards, but there was, the picture was about this alligator wrestler, because this alligator is a state symbol of Florida, and we have a lot of pictures of Jews on alligators. I have a whole collection of that.
Wow.
So in the background, there's a wooden poster board, and it says, "Coming soon, Schutz Brothers." This is the picture. I know this is radio, but I just want to show you. This is the picture that I'm talking about. See the alligator?
We'll try to get that so that people can see that.
And if you look in the background, it says, "Coming soon, Schutz Brothers, new goods," and it's for a department store. I later found out that that was the same Schutz that came to St. Petersburg. It was Schutz Brothers. They were German immigrants, and one of them found that he could come to St. Petersburg, was emerging as a city. So he left Orlando and came to St. Petersburg.
Wow.
So I got very excited. And I found an ad for his paper. Here was a picture of him. And here was an ad for his the store in Orlando.
Oh, in, this is or, a, this in is, Orlando? Or
this
in
is the ad in Orlando.
I got it. That's from Orlando.
This was in... yeah, on Orange Avenue in Orlando, but it's Schutz, but that's Henry Schutz. That's the first person that came here as a Jew.
Did he come by himself? Are you
yes.
able to see if...
He came by himself. He was not married. And he opened a dry goods store at 341 Central Avenue. All the early stores were on Central Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And there were 1,600 people in St. Petersburg at that time in 1901. And he... he married in 1910... His wife, Emma, she came, I think, from Chicago, like you. She had a women's apparel shop. And it wasn't until 1908 then that we had other Jews. So they were the only two Jews here. Well, he was the only Jew until 1908. And then other Jews came, and then he married her around 1910. The next Jewish residents were from Poland, the Terapani family. And they had a store in the 300 block of Central, and Olga and Leon were their name, Olga and Leon Terapani, and they had the first Jewish child born in Pinellas County.
Mm.
Her name was Ann, and she was born in 1914.
Mm. Wow.
And then many members of the St., it was a large family, they started arriving, and some settled in Tarpon and in Clearwater.
Oh, really?
So the best known is Abe Terapani, who opened a store in 1910 known as the New York Bargain Store on Tarpon Avenue, and that would be renamed Terapani's Department Store in 1935. Mm. And then a relative, Sam Lovitz, joined him in 1913. The last time I was in Tarpon Springs and I went up there for an art festival, the name of the store was still in the sidewalk.
Oh, wow.
In the tiles. And I'm assuming it's probably still there all these years later. Now, that same year, 1908, Austrian Jews Benjamin and Yetta Hauser arrived in St. Pete. Ben had a gas station and a tire store. The first Jew in Clearwater was in 1912. His name was Louis Frank, and he came from Lithuania. And he came with $500, which was a lot of money in 1912. And he opened the New York Department Store. I guess it had a cachet or something to call him, because most of them were called New York Bargain Store, New York Department Store. There were no paved streets or sidewalks in Clearwater. There were no Jewish women in the area. He came as a single man. So he went to he went to a matchmaker in New York, and he met his wife, Hannah. And I found it very interesting, before he came, now these Jews didn't come directly from Lithuania to Clearwater.
Right.
They were meandering around the world on the way here, the, you know, finding out where Jews could live comfortably. And this man, Louis Frank, had been to Africa. And he had worked in a diamond mine in Africa.
Wow.
And he had an uncut diamond that he had brought with him. So he, when he went to meet Hannah in New York with the matchmaker, he took this diamond and he had it cut in New York and polished at Tiffany's.
Wow.
And then he proposed to Hannah with that diamond. I thought that was a really interesting story.
That's a great story.
Now, they had a son, Darwin, who was known to contemporary Jews, Darwin Frank. He was born in 1919, and he ran the store until 1973.
Oh, wow.
So he was active in the community. In fact, the congregation here that started in 1923, B'nai Israel, he was president of B'nai Israel. And then settling in St. Petersburg around 1920, we have the Hyman Jacobs family. They became the 10th Jewish family in St. Petersburg. And they opened a market called OK Markets. It was a grocery store. Hyman was a Hebrew teacher. He had that background. And he became the first president of Congregation B'nai Israel in 1923, when it was formed. By that time, there were 12 Jewish families here. They were all merchants. They were all from Eastern Europe. And they met in a storefront on Central Avenue. Hyman was the first Jew to be a member of the St. Petersburg Chamber of Commerce. And his daughter, Goldie Schuster, was the one that I learned a lot of this history from. She began to write the Jewish history of St. Petersburg in 1969. Mm. So we had something to go on. Some of the communities around Florida, we had nothing.
Yeah.
But a lot of what I'm telling you came from Goldie. And I was fortunate to meet her before she died and learn what she had researched. As a matter of fact, I have a great picture of Goldie. I live on St. Pete Beach, about a mile from the Don Cesar. And I walk to the Don every day. That's my walk. It's 1 mile. And I have a great picture of Goldie in front of the Don Cesar Hotel, which I love. That was built in 1928. And they were here at that time.
That's a great transition for us, I think, because you're talking about hotels. And I know that in your research, you uncovered stories of families who were shut out of hotels, neighborhoods, country clubs, who responded by building their own. What's the most vivid example you found of that kind of creative defiance right here in Pinellas County?
Well, the most definitive example, well, I want to back up before I want to talk about the realm.
Okay.
Right. But before that, I want to mention that in my oral histories, there were people that talked about the sign that was on 4th Street North leading into the city from the Gandhi Bridge in the 1920s that read, "Gentiles only, no Jews wanted here." So that was before the hotel situation. And many attributed a lot of the anti-Semitism in St. Petersburg. Is that okay if I talk about the anti-Semitism before?
Well, we've got about 5 minutes, so oh. I'd love to focus on the...
Okay.
As you said, the Hotel Realm that was a...
Yeah, it was... well, what happened was there were... In the 1920s, anti-Semitism was very acceptable here. The Chamber of Commerce did not deny it. They had one of their own members that was very... had a large voice about that. And there were restricted policies existed in most of the private clubs and civic organizations like the St. Petersburg Yacht Club, the Rotary, the Suncoasters, the Lions Club. Apartment listings included Gentiles only. A lot of people think it was Miami Beach, but it was also here. In their advertisements in the St. Petersburg Times, hotels like the Vinoy, the Don Cesar, the Tides, and the Bath Club were also off limits. And they had welcomed Jewish guests in the past, but until the 1920s. So this is exactly what happened to Jacob Miller. He had moved from St. Petersburg with his family in 1925, and he spent a summer at the Don Cesar. It was called a summer club. Mm-hmm. And they did not know he was Jewish. So when the next year rolled around, they found out that he was Jewish, and he was not allowed again to come to the Don Cesar. So he decided... He was open his own hotel. And this is one of my favorite stories about St. Petersburg. It was immediately south of the Don Cesar in Paso Grill. The address was 3200 Gulf Boulevard on the Bayside. And the owners, he decided he wanted to open a hotel, but the owners would not sell to a Jew. and the owner of the property was actually the man that had, built the Don Cesar.
Oh, wow.
And so he wouldn't sell to a Jew, so he had to get an idea. And he was very bright. He reversed the spelling of his name, Miller, to Relim, R-E-L-L-I-M. And the hotel opened in 1940 with 60 rooms. And in 1948, he bought land across the street on the Gulf and built bath villas. The Relim became a thriving, high-end golf front resort, beloved by generations of families. When Jacob Miller passed away, his son Irwin and wife Sonia Halliser, the Hallisers were one of the early families that came here, they took over and invigorated the social life of the hotel with a weekly newsletter called the Relim Tell'em. I love that. And the Relim became actually the social focus point for the Jews of St. Petersburg. It was the central place for meeting until the hotel was sold in 1980 and was torn down to build a condo. But it was interesting because I was in the pool last summer with a friend of mine's son who's visiting from London. And I didn't know this man was Jewish. And he said, I want to ask you something. I understand you're Jewish, and I understand you've done some research about the Jewish history of Florida. My parents used to come to a place called the Relim in Paso Grill because they couldn't get into hotels. And, I mean, this is now I'm talking to a person whose family had actually stayed there. I got very excited.
That's amazing.
And he lives in London.
That's amazing.
So these things, it all comes full circle, and that's what makes it so much fun, all these stories.
I have one last question, and that is, as you said, there's so many amazing stories. Can you give us some fun historical facts from Pinellas County that you think would surprise people the most?
Well, I think, I can talk about an industry or I can talk about individuals.
Whatever. I think we've got 1 or 2 minutes. So whatever you can do in 1 or 2 minutes.
Okay. Well, in 2 minutes, the development, real estate development sector was very largely influenced by Jews. Here, Charlie Wettenberg, Mel Sembler. There are many Jews, the shopping centers that we go to, the malls, Publix, where Publix is, they were all developed by Jews. But I think some of the fun things that people might not know about Jews from this area is Sarah Blakely. You've ever heard that name?
I have not.
Okay, well, she created Spanx.
Oh, Sarah Blakely.
And she was born and raised in Clearwater. And in 1998, with $5,000, she overcame her youth and her sexism, and she created Spanx because she put on a pair of white pants to go to a party. She was living in Atlanta, and she didn't like the lines that her underpants were giving her, so she cut off a pair of pantyhose. She cut off the feet and put on the pantyhose, and that's how she got the idea for Spanx. And Oprah Winfrey, in 2000, named Spanx her favorite product. So in the first year, she had $1 million worth in sales and $10 million in her second year. It's available in 50 countries now, and Forbes magazine in 2012 named her the youngest self-made billionaire.
I'm so glad you mentioned her, because when we think about history and the history in this area, we immediately start going back to the very beginnings, which are important. But we're making history right now. I mean, history continues, and it's exciting to see that you are continuing to research what's happening here.
And did you know that the Bending Arc at the new pier downtown was developed? It's a fiber sculpture. Was created by a fourth-generation Jew.
No, I didn't know
Janet
that.
Eckelman.
Wow.
Her family settled in Key West in the 1880s, and some of them went to Tampa. And she's a Tampa native. She's a fourth-generation Floridian Jew. And this is her first. She's displayed in 37 countries on 4 continents. But this is her first project in Florida. Did you see the Bending Arc when it opened? It was destroyed during the hurricane.
I know.
And I understand it's going to be reinstalled after this hurricane season.
Oh, wow!
And it wasn't the fault of the sculpture. It was because it wasn't installed properly.
I'm going to turn this. I want to thank you, Marcia, for being with us, Marcia Jo, for being here with us and for sharing. I know you have so much expertise. Thank you for telling us some of these vignettes. I'm going to turn this back to Nanette for a closing.
Well, I want to thank Beth and Marcia for really sharing with us
the role that the Jewish community has played in shaping our American story here. And finally, Marcia, might I ask you before we sign off, as we approach America's 250th anniversary, what do you hope future generations will understand about our community, this place, Pinellas County, and the Jewish community's role in the American story?
Well, I would like to say that diverse cultures have enriched this state over time, and each have left their footprints. And I want people to know that the Jews left their footprints here. Not only, like Beth just mentioned, but not only the longtime historians, historic profile, but the new generation that comes. And each one is improving the quality of life for all peoples. Our biggest issue today is anti-Semitism. And that's a 2,000 year, it's the longest hatred in the world. It's 2,000 years old. And I do a whole lecture on that. But what I want to know is that people have, even though there are people hated, there's a lot of racism in the world today, that Jews in Pinellas County and Jews in Florida and Jews in the whole nation have contributed greatly. And that's what I want. It's the education that we need.
Absolutely.
The ignorance is what is really harming us today.
Thank you, Marcia. That's beautifully said. Folks, I am the series host, One Place, Many Voices, Nanette Weiser, and I want to thank Tim Valley, our audio engineer and producer, for being in studio with us, the one and only Beth Gelman, who always delivers such a beautiful and eloquent interview. And Marcia, we cannot wait to know more about you. We look forward to seeing you around town at some other lectures. One Place, Many Voices, Pinellas County. You can listen anywhere, anytime on Radio St. Pete. You'll also be able to listen on their story. This is Heritage Village's 50th anniversary. And if you want to have your story, your community, your organization, your faith as part of this wonderful, wonderful oral history collection and podcast, please email me at wiser86@gmail.com. Heritage Village celebrates 50 years. America celebrates 250. And this podcast is absolutely thanks to Florida Humanities, a grant, and in collaboration with Heritage Village. So for One Place, Many Voices, Pinellas County, we look forward to hearing from you and talk to you at the next podcast.